serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 92-year-old Dan Cano of Santa Maria, California. He had only finished 10th grade when he joined the Navy at age 17. That wouldn't stop him from a long career as a civil engineer after the war, even participating in the construction of the massive California Aqueduct. But during World War II, he was piloting Higgins boats in the Pacific. You heard about the carnage he witnessed at Tarawa, where 1,700 Americans lost their lives in just 4 days, and more than 2,000 more were wounded. After making another landing at Kwajalein, he remained on land there to help establish a base supporting further assaults.
You stay behind, and they say, okay, this is where we're going to build the boat pool, and this is where we're going to keep the boats and what need to be done. You had to do whatever, carpentry, whatever need to be done, you did it.
And staying behind there saved you from other invasions that guys on your APA had to carry out and deliver troops the same way you had at Tarawa. But tell me about Admiral Nimitz, because I think most people know that name, and even if they don't recognize the source, they probably know his quote about those brave Marines who you were taking to the beaches when he said, among the Marines in the Pacific War, uncommon valor was a common virtue. It sounds like what you're describing from the Marines you saw, they certainly embodied those words of the Admiral.
Oh, yeah. Those Marines, they brainwash them. They're fighters. They're the best.
You saw it. You saw it firsthand. And you also, unknowingly, at least initially, had an encounter with the guy who was in charge, with Admiral Nimitz. We're a couple feet away from a photo of him waving from your LCVP. How'd that happen? Tell me the story.
Well, we went into Kwajalein, and we secured the island. Once we unloaded everything, we went into the inner bay. We got to the big island where the airport airfield was at, and we beached our boats, and everybody walked out of the boats and just dropped in the sand because we've been going at it day and night. And we just laying there, and then I heard a voice asking, it says, "Sailor, can you take me back to the ship?" The guy gave me the F word. And I looked up, and it was an ensign, and I said, oh, my God, he's done for. So he walked up to the other guy and told him, go away, you know. And so I finally got up and said, I'll take you. So, and at the time, I didn't know who it was. So he says, where's your boat? He says, and I took him to the boat, and then he motioned to the deal, and I saw him coming. I said, oh, it's Nimitz. He said, how did he get here? But later on in a book that I read, he was a very, very smart person. He would go in to the island after the invasion and debrief the people. Regardless if you're an officer or you're a private or whatever, he wanted to know, how would this have been better? How could you make it better for next invasion? And they took all that information. Then is when they decided that by conquering every island was going to be a lot of lives lost. And that's what happened to Truk. We isolated Truk. We took all the little islands around it, and we isolated, and they couldn't be supplied. They either gave up or starved to death, or they committed suicide. But when he came over, you know, he came aboard, and he asked for permission. He said, permission to come aboard, just like I was going aboard, you know, and I told him, permission granted. So I said, okay, son, take me back to the ship. So I took him to the cruiser, and what he's doing there, he's saluting the bridge, because they came over to see the boat coming across, and it was him, you know. So officer of the day and the captain, the admiral's up there, they're welcome him back, and he'd salute him, and that's what looks like he's waving, but he's doing a hand salute.
Yeah, he's either coming up or coming down from the salute. And so the commander of the entire Pacific Fleet asked the 18-year-old kid from the Mexican border if he can come aboard his boat.
Yep, because he knew I was a captain for one day.
And I'm just looking at this photo, which is actually a freeze frame from a film. So there's the Admiral with his helmet on, and the star on his collar, of course. And that's you standing up behind him with, is that no shirt on?
No shirt, no shoes, shorts, no helmet. I think helmet's laying on the engine compartment. On the back of the boat, they had a splashboard. They called it a splashboard. So when you back out of the beach, the waves were breaking, and the water would come into the boat, and it would swamp it. And so they came up with this idea, this splashboard. It was made like a wing out of plywood. So I had seen movies where they they used to call it aquaplane boards, and it had a bridle, and they tied it behind the boat, and you stand on it. And after that came water skis. So I told the guy, says, give me the line. We got the line, and I tied the board, and I dumped it over the side, and I said, okay, start it. So they started it, and I was riding the board in back of the boat. That's what he used to do, and we'd take turns. The deckhand and the engineer would, and people were laughing and waving. And
you did that at Kwajalein, or what?
Yeah, everywhere there was an invasion. Yeah, at Kwajalein, we did it. At Tarawa, we didn't, but at Kwajalein, and at Philippines, there was too much going on over there.
So you were a water skiing pioneer? Is that what you're telling me?
But it, I guess.
And there's another story with this incident with Admiral Nimitz. I mean, you deliver him back to his flagship, but back in Texas, your cousin is working at a movie theater? And what happened next?
Well, after the battle, RKO was documenting everything. The filming crew was with the Admiral, and they were filming him. And this one shot that I got on this video with me in the background, you know, came up. And I knew it was there. So when I came out, I kept looking. I used to go to the movies, the news, and newsreels about the war and all that. Anything they had to do with newsreels, I'd go look at it and see if I could find this shot. But my cousin was working the theater. He was a projectionist. And at that time, you had to reel and rewind every reel, you know, once you showed it. And he was rewinding, and he saw it. It had a frame where he's viewing it, and he saw this figure, and he says, I said, Dan. And he stopped it, and he rewinded up and then looked at it. It's Dan. So he projected on the big screen. He ran out of there, and we lived about a block from the theater and went over to my mom's and told us, I want you to come over here. I want to show you something. And they came, and they saw me on the screen. All the people that were in the service, serving in North Africa, Europe, wherever in the world, you know, the Pacific, they knew where they were at. Some of them did, but they knew that I departed from the West Coast, so they figured I'm in the Pacific. And this is when they found out that I was in the Pacific and where I was at, that I was in Kwajalein. And a lot of people didn't know where Kwajalein was at.
What are the odds of that? I mean, what is the probability that, A, you would be in that shot with an admiral, that, B, your cousin would be the one projecting it at the movie theater, and that your parents would be able to come over and see that and in that fashion find out where their son was on the other side of the world? I mean, how crazy is that to imagine?
Well, an act of God. That's all I can think about. Yeah. And I didn't know that. Well, I knew they had taken the film. So when I came out, you know, like I said, I was looking at everything, the photos of the war and everything. Then when TV came around, they had that program, what was it called? Victory at Sea. And they had 1 week they'd give the European, another week they'd give the Pacific. And so I used every Sunday, sit down and watch it. And I never saw it. And then about 10 or so years ago, we had moved back to Sanger. And walked into Walmart, and they had a rack of videos there, World War II videos. They're a dollar. And there was five videos that they had. And they brought the number one, and then next week they brought number two. And So I used to run in the store and search for it, and I got all five of them. And I went through every one of them. And the last one, and it was about ready to finish because the war was coming to an end. That's when I saw that. My wife and I would sit and view that thing, and she was asking questions and stuff, you know, telling her this, that we were here and all that stuff. And then I jumped up, said, there I am, and I ran to the TV, and I stopped it. I rewinded it back up. And then I got the picture, and I looked at it, and then she said, she kept looking at it. She said, is that you? I said, yeah, it doesn't look like you. She said, no, that's me. So I took the camera and took picture of the screen.
Well, what do you think of when you look at that on the wall? What memories does it bring back to you?
Well, where I was at that time, you know, what it was like. The invasion was over. We were at ease. We didn't worry about anything. The only thing we worried about was going from Kwajalein back to Pearl. We got to Hawaii. They had a camp at the entrance. It was a boat pool, but a personnel pool also. And they used that to replace people that had gotten killed or gotten sick or whatever. They needed people. They line you up and says, you, and you this way, you over there. So when I came back from Kwajalein and then went to the pool, after about a week, they call us and they load us up. And same routine, went out to sea, been out at sea, and they brought out the map, says we're going to the Philippines, going to Leyte. So we went to New Guinea, picked up troops in New Guinea. We spent about a couple of weeks, and then all the ships starts coming in, battleships, and all you could see was nothing but ships from your ship to the horizon. And we went into the Philippines in Leyte, and we landed in Dulag, and MacArthur landed in Palo, and it was about a couple of miles from Tacloban. Otherwise, I would watch the big production.
Well, Dan, we're running short on time here, but there are a couple other things that I want to ask you about. I know you and your wife, Vera, enjoyed your time in Sanger in the Central Valley, and now I know you love the cool air of the Central Coast here in Santa Maria, but how many kids and grandkids and great-grandkids do you have?
I got three kids and grandkids, honey?
12.
Great-grandkids? 10?
Well, I'm just thinking. Three kids, 12 grandkids, 10 great-grandkids. That's 25 people who wouldn't be here if you didn't survive the war. You ever think about that?
Yeah, because my father-in-law used to say, look what I did when all the kids were surrounding them. Look what happened when I came over here.
And you got to go on the honor flight, is that right?
That was fabulous. I recommend that to every vet. It's unbelievable.
What was the best part of it for you?
The police escort that we got in Washington.
You don't know how many veterans tell me that. I mean, I guess it makes you feel pretty special, huh?
Oh, yeah. The look that the people are standing on the sidewalk expecting an ambulance or a fire truck, and they see a bus, it's unbelievable.
Well, and one of the reasons they do that is because it is important for you guys to be able to get to your memorials. And that World War II memorial has a wall of gold stars. That's representing 406,000 Americans.
I got a picture of those.
Well, what did you think about when you were looking at that? With everything you'd been through and the carnage that you described at Tarawa, are those the things that came to mind as you took that in?
You just go back and reminisce at what took place and thank God to come out without a scratch. Every day, I think when I get up and bring me this far, and bless me with all my children.
Mm-hmm. You know, most of the people listening to this right now, they weren't alive when all of this was happening. They certainly didn't see what you saw, what you had to deal with as a teenager. For all those Marines that you saw pay the ultimate price at Tarawa and at other places, how should those men be honored or remembered today?
Every veteran should be honored and given the benefits that they deserve.
Well, there's one thing I want to make sure I say. Thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story. Is there something that, when you look back on all of this, that you'd say that you're most proud of personally?
Being in the service and serving the country. And I tell this to a lot of people, you know, if it wasn't for all those teenagers those remaining people that would have survived to get to this point would not be speaking English. Or there would be ashes out in the field for fertilizer, especially if you're a minority.
That's a unique way of expressing it, and it just reminds us what a debt of gratitude we owe to Dan Cano and all of those who have put their lives on the line for us. That's all the time we have today. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.